From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Y. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov.
How's everybody doing?
Good.
How do you like this 18th century air conditioning?
Yes.
Ladies, gentlemen, boys and girls, my name is Kaz, and I welcome all of you to the Independence Hall tour.
I admit, even though I'm a Philadelphia native, it's been a few decades since I took a tour of Independence Hall. But apparently, not a lot has changed. And Philadelphia Magazine staff writer David Morrell says that's the problem. Independence Hall and the park around it aren't being kept up particularly well. He recently took the tour himself.
One of the oldest, most historical buildings in the country.
There's no video that plays. It's just a Park Service ranger talking to you in sort of a dimly lit, carpeted room.
We say about 75% of it is original.
As if you're in a fifth grade, you know, lecture class about American history.
The colors that you're going to see today.
But the problems at Independence Hall aren't just low production values. In a recent story, David documented peeling paint, plaster falling off walls, and in some cases, serious safety issues in Independence National Historical Park. We're talking about Independence Hall, the place where the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution were signed. And it's not like no one comes here anymore. It's actually the fourth most visited national park in the country.
In 2018, 4.6 million people visited the park.
Why isn't Independence Hall and the park it sits in better maintained? And what does that say about the American government that was born there? Today on The Why, fixing the cradle of liberty. So, David, we just talked about the conditions at Independence Hall, but the park actually has several other significant sites in it. What state are they in?
The most significant one would probably have to be the First Bank of the United States, which is essentially the brainchild of Alexander Hamilton. You have to consider the significance of this building. It was the first federally constructed building by the United States ever. It was also believed to be the first to ever use an eagle as a symbol on the frieze out front. It's been closed now for 30 years or so. There's lead paint on the walls. The carpet is this kind of funky red color that hadn't been vacuumed in a long time. It was damp and musky. And it doesn't have a fire suppression system.
Wait, it doesn't have, like, sprinklers?
It does not have any fire suppression system, which sounds crazy. If you can believe this, though, Independence Hall actually didn't have fire suppression until the 1990s. So, and this is a real point. I mean, we talk about, does it matter if a place doesn't have fire suppression? And you think, well, probably not. You know, there's never going to be a fire there. But, of course, Notre Dame recently caught on fire. But even more locally, there was a fire just down the street a few months ago in Old City. So to say that this couldn't happen at a place like the First Bank is maybe naive.
If this is one of the most visited national parks, why is it in this state?
Essentially, it boils down to the park itself has about a $24 million annual operating budget, but the park hasn't had a budget increase in the past decade. Now, there are 419 total Park Service units in the country, and all of them compete for the same funds. So what that means in practical terms is that the projects with the most significant, the most dire urgency get funded first, which is maybe a good way of doing it. But on the other hand, what that means is that if some place like the First Bank doesn't have a fire suppression system or the paint's peeling, then it may not rise to that level of absolute necessity for the park to give it the money. And just quickly, the other thing that's important here is that the city of Philadelphia actually owns Independence Hall and the Liberty Bell. And so, you know, you might say, well, perhaps the city has some fiscal responsibility to pay for the park. But in the past decade, the city has only spent $76,000 on the park, which I note in the story is about the salary of one single police officer.
Well, why is that? Because doesn't the park bring a lot of tourism to the city? Wouldn't the city have an incentive to really put a lot into the park?
The city does. By Independence Park's own estimates, it brings some $270 million in revenue, and this is in 2018, for the city surrounding area. specifically $86 million for hotels and $62 million for restaurants. So people come to the area, and then as tourists do, they stop and buy an ice cream cone or what have you. And, you know, you see the money that comes in. It's millions of dollars.
What has the mayor said about the federal government's commitment and about their own commitment? How do they regard that division of responsibility?
Mayor Kenney has not said very much other than to say that it's not Philadelphia's responsibility. I reached out to his office for comment when writing the story and asked exactly how much the city had spent in the past decade on the park. The response I received was essentially, we have a lot of other more pressing issues. We don't think that Philadelphia, as one of the poorest big cities in the country, should have to pay for this. And I mean, one of the ironies of this entire situation in my mind is that the park itself is sort of a monument to the American system of government. It's the monument to American federalism, this sort of unique division of, you know, states and city governments with the overarching federal system. And the reason why the park is in bad shape today is precisely because of this sort of quasi-federal state in the park. The city owns some of the buildings, won't pay for them enough to support them, and the federal government has too many other responsibilities, so they won't either. So you sort of have this strange, conflicting situation where neither side is giving the adequate funding.
There's another group that is working to support the park. It's a Friends of group called Independence Historical Trust. You met with one of the members. We spoke with their executive director,
Tom Caramanico. I'm a volunteer in that position.
What are they trying to accomplish?
So the Friends of Independence Trust, now they're called the Independence Historical Trust. They were formed in 1976 for the U.S. Bicentennial Celebration, essentially to fix the same problem that's really been ongoing with the National Park Service.
We work with the park to raise money for things that don't fit into the federal budget or are things that are too small or too large to get done in a reasonable time.
In particular, what this group is trying to do now is raise $30 million to reopen the First Bank, which I mentioned earlier has been closed for 30 years. So far, they've raised about $15 million, but only $2 million in private donations is a relatively small figure.
So the answer to the question, you know, does anybody care? Yes, people care. Is everything up to speed? Is everything up to snuff and where it should be? It clearly is not.
And why is that? I mean, just in 2017, the new Museum of the American Revolution was able to raise $165 million from philanthropists, corporations, thousands of individual donors. So this money is out there. Why isn't it going to Independence Hall?
This gets at one of the real challenges facing the park, which is that the National Park Service has a fairly strict amount of regulation regarding what sort of donations it can accept. So when you think about places that donate to fund various, you know, public initiatives, you have private philanthropers who often donate and then get something named after them. This is sort of the quid pro quo of philanthropy, if you will. The park has stringent regulations saying that, for instance, if a company, say Coca-Cola, wanted to donate to a park, the most recognition they could get is a small plaque with the name Coca-Cola on it, and it could not even be stylized in the Coca-Cola font. That would be too much. So this basically shuts off an entire avenue of possible funding from the corporate world.
They have much more of that marketing money than they do philanthropy money. So we would like to get access to that marketing money, but we can't because we can't put up a corporate logo outside in a park. So yes, it makes it a little more difficult.
What you're left with is soliciting donations from private individuals who just have such a sense of civic ethics that they're willing to donate millions of dollars in some cases for very little recognition.
This is the fourth most visited national park. There are 4.6 million people who visit Independence Hall every year. Does that give anyone an excuse to say, hey, we're drawing visitors. We don't need to invest that much in this place. It's already doing well.
The Park Service, another one of their strange regulations with regard to Independence Hall, is that there are no entrance fees. It is free for everyone. You can understand it ideologically. The park is here to celebrate America. It's the land of the free. We should be able to see where our country was formed for free. Right, that makes sense. But the upshot is that the park loses a huge potential avenue of funding. So just to give you a quick example, in Yellowstone, which has about the same number of annual visitors as Independence, that every year Yellowstone receives $9 million worth of entrance fee money. If, just say, as a thought experiment, Independence had that money, 3 years from now, $9 million, 20 times three, that's $27 million. That's almost the entirety of the First Bank project. So it cripples the park, and it really makes it hard for them to reinvest in its upkeep.
We're airing this episode right after 4th of July weekend. Does that make kind of the whole debate over upkeep of this a little bit, you know, more timely and urgent?
Well, certainly I think the interesting news that recently broke about the Park Service being forced to reallocate $2.5 million of its budget to cover the big parade featuring tanks, which is costing a lot of money, it's being taken out of the National Park Service's coffers.
Military tanks have begun to arrive in our nation's capital as part of President Trump's big 4th of July celebration.
This is particularly ironic when you think that this is the 4th of July celebration, and the park that actually memorializes what happened on July 4th back in 1776 is here in Philadelphia, and as we've been talking about, needs money. So you talk about, you know, talk about a misallocation of resources if there ever were one. I mean, the park could really use $2.5 million. And the other thing to just keep in mind about not this July 4th, but there's another significant July 4th coming up in 7 years' time. That'll be 2026, the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, or called the semi-quincentennial celebration. This is going to be a nationwide, huge birthday party for America. And naturally, Philadelphia should be featuring quite prominently in that celebration. And so really, the stakes are high because right now the park is not in good enough shape to present to the entire country as the birthplace of America. So they need to get their act together fast.
David, thank you so much for coming in and talking about this.
Thanks for having me.
The Why is produced by me, Shai Ben-Yaakov, along with Annette John Hall and Alex Stern, with editorial direction from Katie Culinary. We had editing help on this episode from Eugene San. Send a tweet at Shai Ben-Yaakov. We'll be back tomorrow.